the key to that is that she just refuses to give up her seat for anyone. So she said even if she has to sit on the floor, she's going to be at a meeting and she's going to be present. So I'm excited to hear what she has to say tonight. So let's give her a round of applause for Carla.
Hello, I'm Carla and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carla.
So real quick, just a quick note, I have a black eye. So just to explain it real fast, no, I didn't get, I told my coworkers that I got in a bar fight and they called my bullshit what really happened. So I actually had a thing removed from there. So it was worse than this, but my man would not go anywhere with me for like, yeah. Well, because he's 6'4" and like 280 pounds, it's like, gee, he's like goatee shaved head. He's like, they're gonna think shit on you. It was so funny. But anyways, okay, so I am definitely here today by the grace of God. Let's see, a little background on me. I was born in Oceanside, but when I was around 7, we ended up going to Merced because that's where my parents are originally from. My dad was in the military and got out. I grew up in a house where both parents worked. My dad started out as a welder and was going to school at night for business management, and my mom always worked in factories. She was a forklift driver. It was me and my sister, and I grew up pretty good household. I mean, they provided everything. We didn't lack for anything. My parents made sure what we wanted we had, what we needed we had. Growing up, I was in band. I was in the FFA. We played baseball. Like, we were involved in everything, and I made good grades. And it was probably about the time, I think it was about 12 or 13, alcoholism was in our family. My dad's parents, my grandfather was a huge alcoholic. His brother was. My dad was a functioning alcoholic. He only drank beer, but every night after work and all day on the weekends, but never to an extent that he couldn't function. But I did know what it was. I was subjected to it because the men in our family that were alcoholics were pretty abusive. My mom kept it to where I wasn't around that part of our family very much, so we weren't exposed to it a whole lot. Now, when I was little, they would send us off to their house in Hanford to visit. And yes, of course, we knew where the bar was in the house. And when no one was looking, we would try it. And right then and there, the first drink I took, I knew. I loved it. Like, it was just great. But it wasn't something that, oh, my God, I have to do this all the time. So about the time I was in a junior high, getting ready to go into high school, my dad's sister and her husband, huge alcoholics and drug addicts, ended up losing their children, their boy and girl, my cousins, because of their drinking and abuse. They came to live with us, and it was supposed to be for a short time. They ended up leaving. We went to the house, and they were gone. So we ended up taking them on, and things were great, but I could see how it was a little declining, you know. I wasn't exactly a model type in school. I was overweight, so I already had a complex that. Now I got 2 blonde haired sisters with long legs, all pretty, and they're in the same grade. So, well, a year less, but still, it was like, oh my gosh. So I kind of was already a misfit in a way, and I knew that I was different. They were girly, I was not. I grew up learning how to weld, hunt, fish. I was the tomboy. And then I felt like that was kind of, I started having issues because when my male cousin came along to live with me, ended up being my brother, my dad kind of took him in and I went to the wayside. Well, my mom goes shopping with my sisters and I hated that. So I felt like I was alone. And then, of course, you know, came sexual abuse and stuff like that. Eventually he left. But the seed was kind of planted in there that I didn't belong. So at school, I started finding myself hanging out with people where I felt like I belonged and doing things I normally wouldn't have done to fit in. I started hanging out, ditching school, drinking. I had a license, so me and one of my friends would constantly ditch and drive up to San Francisco. Our dumbasses would smoke weed on the wharf and panhandle. We did. It was, I don't know what we were thinking, but it's just one of those things. And so I just kind of felt that I was trying, I knew it wasn't me, but I felt that sense of security in people that I normally wouldn't have hung around with. And then at that point, between the drinking, I was more into weed, but then I got introduced to meth. And that kind of, everyone's like, oh, you'll lose weight. That's like topping 250 pounds. Doesn't sound bad to me. And not just that, like, I was getting a lot of shit done, you know? I mean, it was awesome. They didn't tell me the part, though, after 2 weeks that you would sleep for, like, 4 days, but that was fine. So I was kind of on and off with that stuff, but I noticed when I started that I ended up dropping out of band, and I stopped playing baseball, and I barely graduated high school, a person that used to get straight A's. I was getting D's and F's. The teachers were like, if she doesn't down, she won't graduate, and I barely made it, like barely made it. And when I was out of high school, one of our neighbors got me a job working at a school for kids on probation and parole. And I thought, well, that's good. I mean, shit, I'm 21 years old at this point, and I'm making, at that time, a little over $1,600 a month, which was good back then. I mean, we're talking 1997, you know? So that was awesome. And so I was around 97. I was excited. My parents ended up moving to Tulare for my dad's work, and my sister, one got married, one joined the Navy, so there I was in Merced, and that, I started drinking a lot. I was at the bars with my roommate all the time, and it just wasn't going anywhere, and my drinking kind of started getting out of hand at the point I lost my job. So I ended up moving to down here with them. They were living actually in Visalia at the time. And I got down here, and then, of course, I was working, but I found myself at the base. There was a base out there that had a bar and a lot of men, and that's where I was at. And I actually ended up meeting my first husband there first. Yeah. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking, other than I really, between the weed and the drinking, I don't know, it was bad. Because it was just bad. So I was out there, and when I realized he wasn't going anywhere in his naval career, and he was about to be booted, and I knew that it was going to end bad, I bailed, moved back to Visalia without, the thing is though, is when I was in the process of bailing, met my second husband. Yeah, number two. And this is the part, though, is he's a great guy. And I ended up staying with him for a lot of years when I met him. We ended up going back east, and I didn't drink the whole time. Like, I was with him. I mean, we drank at, like, events, like Marine Corps balls and stuff. But I never drank, not like I used to, not where I knew I could slip. He even had to stop drinking because he would drink and get a little abusive at times, and I almost left him. So the thing was, is even with him stopping drinking, he still was really abusive, mostly a little physical, but mostly it was just verbal and mental. And it got to a point that I reached a record low with myself. I had two sons. They were my stepsons, but they were my sons. I had been raising them since they were babies. I had my oldest one telling me that if I didn't leave, he feared that his dad would take my life. And I knew in my heart that that was true. I just didn't want to give up, and I was scared. I was ultimately very scared to leave. It was a huge step for me. Where do I go? What do? I don't want to go back to California. I don't want to live with my parents. So I called my sister in Tennessee, and her and her husband were law enforcement, and they came and helped me out. And they got me out of that situation. And I got to their house and got in the church, and I was doing really good. And then I decided, when I found out she was pregnant, I'm going to go to South Carolina. I have a friend there, and I'm just going to try and do this on my own. And that lasted about 2 months, and I started drinking. It was 2015. I left him in January. I moved down there in April. And by June, I was drinking all the time. And I was bouncing from place to place in South Carolina. And it was so bad that at one point I decided that I was going to start trucking. So I told my sister there's a trucking school there in Tennessee, and I'm going to go ahead and partake in it. Okay. And so I packed up my shit, got in a moving van, and I left that morning. And before I left, I stopped at the bar to say goodbye to everybody, had a few drinks, stopped at the liquor store, picked up a bottle. And I'm leaving South Carolina, going through North Carolina, stopping at gas stations, filling up with ice and Coke and a thing to put my booze in. Mind you, at this point, too, my stuff's in a moving van. I have AR-15s in the moving van, shotguns, rifles, and I have a loaded SIG sitting on the passenger seat. Because it's an open carry state, you're not supposed to conceal it. And I'm driving down the road. Apparently, one of the gas stations I stopped at, they could smell the booze reeking off me because I got in the moving van, proceeded down the highway, and the next stop I was going to take, the highway patrolman. What happened was I was texting because I needed to get gas, and a guy with big mirrors hit me. And so when I stopped, the police were advancing towards me. Have you been drinking? And I'm thinking, you're not even close enough to me to smell it. What do you mean if I've been drinking? Shut up. I was pissed. And he gets over to me, and they're grabbing the keys out. I got cops over there saying, here's a loaded gun. Like, everybody was going ballistic. Mind you, I had a CCW, but still. I don't think you're supposed to be drunk when you're carrying a gun. So, I got arrested, and I'm sitting in jail, and I'm handcuffed to a bench, and I'm thinking, and I'm in North Carolina. I don't even know where I am. Pope County, North Carolina. I don't know. And I'm like, how am I going to get out of this? Like, what am I going to do? Like, my family's in California, and my sisters are in Tennessee. Like, I don't even know what I'm going to do. So, they're handing me this list that Bill Gosman, and I'm like, okay. So I call my mom, and she's like, let me talk to the sheriff. It doesn't work that way, Mom. This is not Merced. You didn't go to high school with him. Just, I'm going to give you some numbers, and you need to call them, because so far I called two, and they told me good luck, because I don't live here. No one wanted to take their chances on me, because I wouldn't show up for court. So I gave her the numbers, and she hung up the phone, and off to the correctional facility I went. Because at that point, my nearest court date was going to be 2 months out. So unless I make bail, guess where I go? The whole time I went in on a Friday, and the whole time the weekend I'm sitting there going, looking out the little window, going, oh, shit. I'm in trouble. Like, look at, these women are going to kick my ass. Like, I'm freaking out because I don't know what to do. And I'm like, they have me in a cell because I haven't been mentally evaluated. And I'm like, on Monday, I'm not crazy as fuck because I am not going out there. I am not subjecting myself to those ladies because, oh, my God. Luckily, on that Monday morning, my sisters showed up. But I don't know what was worse, those women or my sisters, because you had one that was in the Army and the other one's a sheriff. And when I walked out that door, I was like, okay, I think I'll just go back in. So, needless to say, the truck driving didn't work out because you can't have a DUI and drive for a fleet company. Okay? So I said, well, I'm going to go live with my friend. He's right up here at Gatlinburg. So it was someone I met online. And because I wanted to drink, what I was doing was drinking. And when that didn't work out, the situation got hairy. I just met another person online and went to their place. And I bounced around. I found myself in Kentucky, Missouri. It was a mess. Finally, I know. Meanwhile, I have my ex calling me, can we finalize the divorce? No, not yet. Click. I need the insurance. I need the benefits from your military. Like, no, not yet. So, It was horrible, and my alcohol was out of control. It was absolutely, I could not function. I was drinking nonstop from the time I woke up till the time I go to bed, just blacking out. So my mom had me cook home during Christmas, and I did. And when I got home, it didn't get any better. It got worse. It got worse. I ended up meeting a guy moving out, and I didn't know I could reach that level. It got to a point that I was literally, I had a job that I wasn't functioning. I was drinking on the job. I drank before, on my lunch, and after. I didn't have DUIs. I was driving on a suspended license. I didn't know it. It was lots of blackouts, waking up in the morning, running outside, seeing if my car had new scrapes, new dents, and if it did, what the hell did I hit? Where was I? You know, going out day drinking and waking up as a dead rat. How the hell did I get to a dead rat? Walking outside going, where the hell am I? Didn't even know where I was. The things that could have happened to me, and I didn't care. And it got to a point that I wanted to kill myself in a bottle. Like, I wasn't going to do it any other way. I would drink, and when I woke up, I was so angry at God. I surveyed how much I drank, bought extra bottles, and proceeded to drink even more, hoping I wouldn't wake up. Finally, my parents convinced me to go to New Visions and get help. I mainly did it at the beginning because people were all over me, and I just wanted it to stop. But when I got in there, the first few nights were scary, but the clarity started to come. I could see. And I started reading the big book. Everyone said to read the first 164 pages, and I did, and I could relate to the madness and the insanity, the switching from beer to wine to this and that. I tried everything in that book. Whatever it said, it happened to me. I did it all. And I knew at that point something had to give. I couldn't keep doing what I was doing. I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was tired of insanity. I just wanted it all to stop. I wanted my life back. And at that point, I didn't even know who I was. Who am I? What kind of life would I have? I know what I started out and what I wanted to originally be. So I stayed there and I did my 30 days. I got out. That lasted 3 days. 3 days, I had a drink. And from there, by the sixth day, I was so drunk that I called New Visions and was talking to them in a blackout. They pinged my cell phone and found me. The sheriff found me at the place I was living. And he took me to the hospital, and he carried me in the hospital, and I had a 0.34 alcohol level. At that time, I weighed 125 pounds. The doctor said I should be dead. Over a third of my body was alcohol. I was drinking like I had never stopped. So at that point, my parents were over the top of me as I was trying to battle a nurse and a security guard to get the hell out of there. And the security guard said, I'm not letting you go. He goes, you're exactly where you need to be. At that point, we were told about Bridge Street. And when I went there at 7 o'clock in the morning, Freeman got a hold of me. I don't know if you guys know Freeman. He got a hold of me. And he told my mom he was taking me there every single day because I was now living with them. And he said, if she can't get her, I'll come get her. And I went there every day at 7 a.m. And that's where I started my sobriety. And I'm not going to sit here and say that it came easy and I stayed sober because I didn't. I have relapses. They weren't 6 3 months at a time. It was just a one-day binge. But it happened repeatedly for the first year. In October of 2018, October 19th, I don't know what it was. I had a sponsor I started with named Lynn, and we sat down and had a long talk. And I went to a women's meeting over at Trinity, and it just clicked. It's just like all of a sudden, I don't know, I was just sitting in the meeting listening to the ladies, and it just, something clicked. And I knew from that point on, I was where I needed to be, in the rooms. That's where I found where I needed to be. I couldn't do it alone. I had struggled with faith. I finally found my higher power, you know, I was struggling with the God thing there for a while. I didn't want to, you know, accept the God thing. But your higher power is your higher power. Your relationship with God is your relationship with God. Everybody has a different way of worshiping, and everybody has a different way of praying. I talk to my God like he is my best friend, okay? I say things to him. Some people call him stupid. You know what? That's okay, because that's my relationship with my higher power. That is what keeps me sober every day. Going to meetings, talking with the women, seeing my sponsor, working the steps. These are what keeps me sober. I am not trying to work other people's programs. I am not trying to have people tell me how I should work mine. I work mine to the best of my ability, and it's working for me because in October I will have 3 years. 3 years. between what had told me this in 2016, I would have said, you were full of shit. That's not possible. I'm going to end up dying before that happens. And I didn't. And the coolest part is in sobriety. It started out rocky. In my sobriety, I have lost my home in a fire. That happened right before my 1 year. My youngest child took his life. That was a struggle. That happened August 16th. It was 3 years this last month, 16th. It was right before my 1 year, and I was mortified. There was nothing I could do. And then March of last year, when COVID hit, we lost our house in fire. So while we're in a hotel, everybody's reading all the TV. Food. Silver lining is I still had the benefits on that card, even though we were divorced for the pay. So we ended up going out there and shopping. So that was awesome. But it was hard because you're trying to get through these things after the fire and the fire department and getting in there and getting a few clothes and stuff like that. I looked at my family. I was like, I have to go to a meeting. And my dad was like going to say something. My aunt's like, shh, no. And I showed up at Christ Lutheran that Friday, which was March 6th, covered in soot, black, head to toe, from going through the remnants of what was left of our home, trying to find clothes that the guy could clean for us until we can get new stuff. Seeing everything just gone. Everything gone. My books gone. Everything. And I went to that meeting, and I just sat there and cried. I was exactly where I needed to be. Because at that point, I had two places, a meeting or a bar. And I'll be damned if I was going to get what I worked so hard for. I was not going to fall back in to the bullshit that I lived. I just wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to do it. And from there, you grow. One day at a time, we're still in a rental home. Our house should have been built by now, but because of COVID, contractors, everything was closed. County, everything was closed. Couldn't get nothing done. They're still trying to build our house. It's a mess. But I'm sober. We're together. We're under the same roof. We don't have much, but what we have, we love. We cherish. We are grateful for. We're grateful we have each other. That could have went bad. It could have been much, much worse had my mother opened the door. I might not have her. I've gone through a lot of things in my sobriety. And I found that when things are tested, I make phone calls. I go to meetings. And I pray. You have to be spiritually fit. It is a must to me to be spiritually fit every day. I have to do morning meditation first every day. I don't, my day goes sideways. Since then, I was fired from my other job. And then I got a job at Walmart. Oh, that was all bad. It was all bad. Don't ever, ever do it. Like, work at Burger King first. Trust me. I put up with him for over a year. It was hell. It was absolute hell. And I couldn't stand it. And finally, when I felt it dragging me down, just dragging me down, I finally quit. And that was the best thing I ever did. Because then an opportunity opened up. It just so happens Walmart did one good thing. They paid for me to get a COE, which is a certificate of eligibility to sell firearms and ammo. They stopped selling ammo. I was kind of pissed, but I still had that COE. So I was sitting there, and I had no job. I was on unemployment, and I'm like, I'm not going to stay here like everybody else and reap unemployment, you know? So everyone's like, why don't you go and apply at the gun stores? You know guns. I grew up around guns. Okay, you're a woman. All right, so I did. I applied. And I'll be damned if there's a man out in Tulare that gave me a job. He actually hired me. And now I actually sell guns and ammunition for a living. And on top of that, he paid for my schooling so that I can be a safety instructor, a certified safety instructor for firearms for people that need to learn about them. So that is amazing. Like, couple years ago, nobody ever would have put a gun in my hand. In fact, when I got busted with all those guns, my sisters got a hold of them, mailed them to my dad, and he refused to give them to me. Probably the best thing he ever did. So, I have them now. I can't say they're all legal, but I do have them. Right. Didn't say where they were. But I love what I do. I get to go to work every day. And even though I'm really tired right now because of exactly how much I'm working, I love what I do. I love the people I work with. I love my customers. I love that I can go to work and I can have a woman come in who has never touched a gun a day in her life. And I can help her pick out the one that is right for her. I can show her how to break it down. I can show her how to use it. I can show her how to defend herself. That is amazing. That's a blessing to be able to have that. I would not have that today if it was not for this program, if it was not for this higher power that I have in my life. I would not have any of that. If I have to sit on the floor, I will sit on the floor. I will do what I have to do. I will never walk away. And I will always have my higher power. It's one of those things, and if you're struggling, you need to stay. If you find that you relapse, it doesn't matter. Sometimes that's part of sobriety. I relapse a bunch of times. I have a lot of 30-day chips, you know? I keep them, too. It's kind of a reminder as to where I started, you know? Not everyone's perfect. It's not about perfection, it's progress. And every day is progress. Every day is a new day. And you wake up, and if you got it, there's days where sometimes it's an hour by hour thing. You know, when I worked at Walmart, I was in the dressing room nonstop doing the serenity prayer because I thought I was going to kill somebody. It wasn't about drinking. I was scared I was going to go to jail for homicide. Like, I really was just like, oh my gosh, you know? It was brutal. It was brutal. And not just the customers, like my coworkers, my managers. It's horrible. But, you know, it's one of those things that I don't have that problem now. I think my biggest problem at work is who's going to lunch first. Because nobody wants to go first. Everybody wants to go last. So it's just, you know, and it's just one of those things. And I'm getting to do things now that I didn't get to do before, not just in my job. I have my family in my life, and they enjoy being around me. I never enjoy being around me, and they actually want to be around me, and I want to be around them. Me and my mother fought my whole entire life because I wouldn't conform to the way she felt a daughter should be, like my sisters. Now, she's my best friend. She's literally my best friend. I don't know what I would do without her every day. I have a good relationship with my dad. He irritates me because he just retired, but he's always there. Just do something. I told him he needed to get a part-time job. I don't think he's taking me serious. It's just one of those things, you know? And I have an 84-year-old grandma with dementia that lives with us right now. And that in itself is difficult because she took a turn for the worst because of the fire. And I don't know if you guys know much about dementia, but they start and there's levels, and she's definitely on a level that it's comical at times, watching her go back and forth and do really weird things that normally a toddler does. She's like reverted to a childlike state, so sometimes it's comical. Sometimes it's just downright freaking annoying. And I pray for her every day because that's got to suck. To have lost everybody in your life, including your love, and be resorted to wearing diapers. Oh my God, it's so funny. I wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning, right? Because I do my thing in the morning. But it never fails. Every morning I come out of my bedroom, go to the bathroom and get coffee, and here comes Granny wearing nothing but her pajama top, her diapers, and her with her cane, holding her tea. Good morning. And I'm just like, yeah, I didn't know what I mean. Yeah. It's an on-running joke at my work. No. Have her niece. Okay. So, it's just one of those things that, you know, you deal with and you struggle. I pray for her all the time and, you know, we're going to have to put her in a home. But if these are the decisions that I am partaking in. Had I not been sober, I never could have been there for my family when the fire hit. My dad was dealing with firemen and the house and the shock of it all and trying to survey damage and this and that. And I'm on the phone with the insurance companies because I'm the only person other than him that knows information, bank accounts, phone numbers, dates of birth, social security numbers. And my mom is on a chair, mentally checked out. Gone. Had I not been sober, I could not have been there for my family. Because it didn't just stop that day. My mom didn't come around for 2 weeks. She was just gone. My dad, 3 days later, went back to work. I guess that's his way of dealing with it. So it literally was on me. I called my aunt. She came down and helped me. I have a sister at the time. It was in Germany, and I have another sister in L.A., who to this day, we have not seen or heard from. We asked her to come. I asked her to come. There's nothing I can do. That's on her. All I can do is move forward with my family, my sobriety, and what we need to do. And so far, we're sticking together, and we're getting through it. We're getting through everything. And I am the person I am. And I have done the things that I have done because of this program. I think it's amazing. Oh my goodness, that's a long time. I've only chaired meetings before. Oh, do we have any questions? That's funny.
No? No questions? Nothing?
I don't know how to do the online. I can't even.
We're going to open up for any questions or if you have any questions, go ahead and ask them.
Like I couldn't think about my glasses. It's one of those things, you know, some people, vision people, like without underwear. I take off my glasses and everybody's blurry. Okay. What's the question?
What step is your favorite step in life?
Well, definitely not four. That was brutal. That was brutal.
Why?
Number four was offers. You have to face everything, all the shitty crap. Oh my God. And then you have to make amends to the two. Although that was fun. Making amends. I actually enjoyed that. That was pretty good because I got to make amends. And, you know, not all of them worked out. For the most part, everybody was very accepting. I have very good relationships now with a lot of the people I made amends with. There is one in particular that couldn't be repaired. And that's okay. I've accepted it. Acceptance is a huge part of the program. I've had to accept a lot of things, and that was one of them, and that's okay, because I did my part, and I can rest easy knowing that I tried to make it right, and, you know, I went and said my piece, but for the most part, that was amazing. I would have to say one of the hardest ones that I did was doing the first step, accepting that I was an alcoholic. That was rough. I didn't want to accept that because to me that was accepting defeat. People were like, why don't you just quit? Nobody likes to quit. Or my dad always told me nobody likes a quitter. So I would use that like that was cool or something. And now looking back, I'm like, oh God, that was so stupid. Really? But, yeah, no, it was hard. It admitted defeat, but in all the end, I am an alcoholic. That is what I am. I cannot drink like a normal person, period. I can't drink at all. One is too many, 1,000 is never enough. I literally, when I pick up one, I won't stop. And I know that about me. I know that. I love the taste. I love the way it makes you feel. It just is amazing. It's sort of, and then shit goes away, and then I wake up the next day going, ah! And it wasn't ever the hangover. It was, what the hell did I do last night? And did I sleep with anybody? Did I wreck my car? Did I do anything stupid? You know, all kinds of just dumb shit. So accepting that I was an alcoholic was hard to admit, but to this day is one of the best things I ever did in my life. Let's see.
Hey, Carla, I'm watching that for you. I'll let you know if I see something.
Oh, okay. I'm like, I can't.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Are you active in sponsorship there?
No. I had a sponsee, and she moved to Texas. Yeah. I wanted to go with her, but that didn't work out. Her husband didn't think that was a good idea. So my fiance didn't think it was a good idea either. I'm like, so it's good. But yeah, I am most definitely available. Yes, there for a while I wasn't sponsoring anyone because I was dealing with so much. But no, now things have definitely come to the point that yes, I am looking to sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Any other
questions?
Yes.
What is your favorite